Today on Noteworthy Networks, we have Courtney Leach, Executive Director of Community Connections. Courtney, of course, is an alumna of UCA, having earned her bachelor's degree in public relations in 2004 and master's degree in higher education administration in 2006. She left distribution management to begin serving as the Executive Director of Community Connections in 2008 when her middle son, Alex, was born with a chromosome deletion. Courtney fell in love with the vision of supporting families of children with special needs and offering the kids quality extracurricular activities. Courtney and her husband, Tripp, have three sons and one daughter, Quentin, Alex, Bentley, and Abigail, and serve on staff at New Life Church in Conway. So welcome, Courtney.
Thank you so much, Brianna. I'm happy to be here.
I'm glad you agreed to come on today. So we're going to go ahead and dive right into the first question of, when did you first become passionate about nonprofit work?
Well, I've told several people I never thought I was going to work for a nonprofit organization outside of a college or university. When I went to graduate school, I had moved from Indiana to Arkansas to attend UCA when I was 18 years old. And it was a lot of the student staff, Hank Phelps and crews in the student center. I got involved in Student Government Association and Counseling Center. Those staff poured into me quite a bit. So I ended up wanting to go and try to make a difference in college age students, and then ended up in management for Target Distribution Center, but never thought I was going to work for a nonprofit. But when I had my son, Alex, and he started receiving therapy and I learned about Community Connections, I fell in love more with the vision of Community Connections. I've said, I'm not sure if I would work for another nonprofit organization or not, but I mean, for anybody who is listening in or tuning in because nonprofit is their sector, I mean, I know so many people more so want to work for a nonprofit because they want to work for a cause and feel like they have meaningful work. So I got interested in nonprofit because of the specific cause Community Connections has with serving children with special needs and their families, because it hit home. And I was then a parent of a child with special needs. And so my entrance came more personally and not because I saw it as a career goal.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about Community Connections and what they do and sort of who is the like founder and starter of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Todd and Amy Denton and David and Krista Tapp are the owners of Pediatrics Plus, which is an outpatient therapy clinic that was started in Conway. They now have multiple locations, but they're offering OT, PT, and speech therapy for kids with a wide range of intellectual and developmental disabilities. And they saw, we were founded in 2007. So back in 2005, 2006, they saw that a lot of kids that have special needs did not really have the opportunity to participate in sports and arts and extracurricular activities out in the community like their siblings and their peers. And that also parents and caregivers raising these children needed a lot of support. You know, regardless if a child is born with something like spina bifida or cerebral palsy or Down syndrome, or at age 2, 3, 5, 8 is diagnosed with something like autism or has a traumatic brain injury. Either way, parents don't always know what the future is going to hold, what to do to best serve their kiddos. So there were things that were outside of the scope of therapy. And so they found the need to start a nonprofit organization. And our mission is to provide quality extracurricular activities for children with special needs and support for their families. So that's been the mission since its inception. We have just grown and morphed, doing more and more things within that mission since it started. But that was back in 2007. I came on board at the end of 2008. So I wasn't the original director, but I have had the opportunity to watch it grow significantly for about 12 years.
Yeah. Awesome. What kind of education, training, or background does working at a nonprofit or starting a nonprofit require?
Yes, that's a great question. I mean, there are some majors that would and degrees that would tend to lend themselves well. Business, you know, kind of the idea of people go into business, you can do anything. I have found that communications is also one of those very versatile degrees, you know, public relations and or mass communications, because every business, every organization, every corporation out there needs great communication. But I think that for specific causes, you will have to know how to do budgeting and handle financing. You will have to know how to clearly communicate and track. You will need a level of administrative skill to work within a nonprofit organization. So I would say maybe communications or business would be two that would probably be more textbook. If you're looking at a nonprofit organization as a job description, that might be a couple of the degrees that they would recommend.
For you being the executive director, you said that you, you know, it would be ideal that you would know how to do like budgeting and things like that. So where did you sort of like learn that? Was that something that you kind of learned once you first started out in the workforce or?
Yeah, well, that's great. And, you know, nonprofits, they're not even all exactly created equal. You know, you have small, mm-hmm. medium, and large size nonprofits. Community Connections was a very small nonprofit organization. When I started, I was a staff of one. And so with small nonprofits, and we're not alone, there's a lot of them out there. And especially for people that are interested in starting a nonprofit organization, I use the analogy and I say that you need to be prepared that you are the janitor and you are the chairman of the board and you're everything in between. You're the director of marketing, et cetera. And so when you are, you know, starting and you're in a small area, one piece of feedback I would give is building a really great relationship with a strong board of directors, because mm-hmm. one thing with nonprofit organizations, they all have boards. And some of the best run organizations I have seen have board members that maybe have expertise in finance. I had several of them. And so while finance wasn't my background, I had board members that were able to look at spreadsheets, look at cash flow with our fundraising and revenue and our expenses. We had a treasurer within our board of directors. And so it was really the treasurer's job to keep on track. And I was in more frequent conversation with our treasurer than any of the other board members. So if that's not your background, I don't want someone to say, but I'm passionate about children or animals or, you know, the environment. And I'd like to work for a nonprofit, but man, numbers aren't my thing. That doesn't necessarily disqualify someone from being effective. Passion is a number one drive I have found with a lot of nonprofit organizations' success, but, it would be having either a volunteer or a board member if it's too small to have a staff to do numbers. For medium and large size organizations, I'm thinking of Special Olympics because we partner with them a lot. Mm-hmm. They have dedicated staff and roles and departments. Arkansas Children's Hospital, they have an entire fundraising staff and an entire finance staff. So if you're a medium or larger nonprofit where there's areas, it would be depending on where you enter and what your service role is within a nonprofit, but then you would work with, you know, the individuals that are crunching numbers or raising funds, et cetera.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that insight. Can you share a little bit about if your company offers internships, paid or unpaid? I know you guys have volunteers, but if you do offer internships, how would a student go about preparing or applying for an internship at Community Connections? Or you can speak more on like the volunteership side.
Yes, I love that question because we love service learning. You know, that was mm-hmm. kind of the term that envelops all of the above. We feel like Community Connections with our mission to serve kids with special needs lends itself well to a lot of disciplines. We work with UCA students all the time. We have a great relationship with the occupational therapy and physical therapy departments and also the education departments, because we have had interns and volunteers, and we really even have program directors. So our programs, for anyone not familiar with Community Connections, I told you our mission. We offer football, basketball, music, art, volleyball, cheerleading, bowling, swim, tennis, golf, different programs out in the community. And they're run by program directors, which are community volunteers. We have had college students all the way up through retired, you know, teachers or grandparents who have served, and we give them a small stipend, but then they lead a once a week basketball program, et cetera. So we have used UCA students in interning with program director roles, especially getting one of the programs like Top Soccer that Community Connections already offers in Conway and Russellville and Little Rock and Sherwood. We have had interns that are from Searcy and or from Texarkana that as their internship, they have launched a program over the summer in their hometown. We have used interns that want experience with event planning and fundraising. We do two big fundraisers every year. One is a dinner gala in November. We've had interns that come alongside and help do that. And we do a golf tournament in the spring. We have had interns that have done grant writing for us, some of the technical writing and grant writing fields. So Community Connections does offer internships. They are not paid. We will pay you in a t-shirt. And I've written lots of wonderful, I feel like, letters of recommendation. So ours are unpaid internships. But what we do, and Jessica Nichols, our director of programs, is we really strive to make a quality learning internship experience. So rather than sending out a job description of exactly what we need when there's someone that is interested in doing an internship, Jessica meets with them and we find out what is their career field, what are their goals, what kind of things do they want to be able to put on their resume when they are graduating, and then we will work to see if there is a fit within our, you know, programs to give them the experience that they want to, you know, gain. And then we use volunteers for every program we offer. So if an internship is a little bit much, our website's a wonderful resource. Our website is communityconnectionsar.org. That's our website, Community Connections. And there is the How You Can Help page. And so if anyone's interested in volunteering with any of our programs, they can fill out a form. They can let us know what city they want to serve with and or what specific program or programs they would be interested in. And then our program directors reach out as those needs come up. But I mean, last time I checked, we use about 700 volunteers a year serving with all of our programs throughout Central Arkansas, volunteering with everything from being a buddy to a child on the football field. We do our football program in Conway on the stripes at UCA, but coming out and, you know, serving with our kids and or volunteering with our event. We have had volunteers. We've had sororities who have come out and organized our storage shed of all of our supplies. So ample opportunities to volunteer. And we do have interns. We usually take 1 to 5 per semester, and they're really on just a personal case by case basis. If someone, what they're trying to gain, you know, in their, you know, leadership skills and for their resume is not really a good fit, most organizations would probably say we would rather have 0 interns than 5 that aren't really a great match. But again, someone, if they're interested in interning, can email Jessica Nichols. She's our director of programs. Her information is on the website, but her email is jessica@communityconnectionsar.org.
So as far as you mentioned a little bit about like you're in different locations and everything, where do you guys, and you have all of these various programs, where do you guys hold them? I know you said for the football, you do it at UCA's football stadium. So where do you guys actually have classes for these kids and stuff?
Yes, I am so happy you asked that. So when I first started with Community Connections, I'm coming from my PR background. And at the time I was working for Target Corporation, which was big. And so branding was really important to me. And I remember actually kind of judging about our board. I was like, why are we called Community Connections? That doesn't say anything about children or disabilities or sports and recreation or the arts. But I have come to really, you know, appreciate what we do, because our model within Community Connections from the very beginning has been to offer our programs out in the community where neurotypical youth would be playing sports or participating in arts. We keep our overhead very low that way, where we, I mean, I have followed cheap rent. Like, we rent an office. I'm over here in the, I'm near Hendrix in the Southwest Energy old building. But, you know, we do everything out and about so that we can get our kids and our families out in the community with the help of community volunteers that serve and help make it possible, with community funding and support. You know, we are 100% supported. We don't have any, you know, government grants. We don't do any insurance billing. So all of our programs are free of charge for families. We buy the uniforms, we buy the equipment and the supplies, but we do those 2 fundraisers I told you about. And then we have donors that give to what we do. And so we really are community connected. So we offer our activities in a lot of libraries and churches and schools and parks and fields. So I don't know if this podcast, most listeners will be tied to the University of Central Arkansas, but example being in Conway, we do martial arts at Grandmaster Hans. It's a martial arts studio here in town. We do cheerleading at Sunshine Academy. That is where a lot of kids are taking cheer here in town. We've done soccer and football at UCA. We have done things at lots of local churches. We do respite care events and things for families. So we are out in the community where we partner with local businesses and local organizations to make our activities possible.
Yeah. So with as many kids as like you're serving, how many of them would you say that you are serving? And then do you have a certain like limit that you say, okay, this is how many people can be involved in the programs this year, or how does that work?
Yes. So COVID threw things a little bit. We're coming back with the vengeance. I think we may serve more kids than ever before here in 2021 fall going into 2022. But we serve about 650 kids every year with our programs in our various cities. Conway and Little Rock have the largest presence. You know, we were started in Conway. A little bit of history. We started with ACTS Junior, which stands for Acting Creates Therapeutic Success. It was a therapeutic arts program with 25 kids. And then we had an opportunity to start soccer. And then we started soccer with about 20 kids. And from there, we just continued to add and grow. But then we had families that were driving in sometimes an hour one way from beyond and past Little Rock and even west of the River Valley so that their child could participate in an hour soccer game. And it kind of kept me up at night. I mean, these families, it's very difficult for families raising kids with special needs. You know, I have four children and my son Alex is as much work as my other three combined, just in reality. And so we want to remove all barriers. That's one of the reasons our programs are free. We don't want funding or logistics to be a barrier for an child to glean the benefits of being on a team and learning collaboration and coordination. All of our programs are structured to be very welcoming and kind of a safe, encouraging environment. A lot of families, when they have put their kiddos out there, because they've melted down or weren't socially appropriate, have had terrible experiences with extracurricular activities for their kids. And so we want to, you know, do our best to make a safe place where a kiddo can thrive and grow. So 650 kids. Last year, when the pandemic hit, we ended up implementing a whole lot more family support programs. So I would say prior to 2020, we probably offered 70 to 80% of our, you know, services were the programs for children with special needs, and 20 to 30% were support for families. We have an autism resource center where we do a summer camp. We have a parents resource guide that's on our website. We have a resource library housed here at our office where we'll lend out books and materials free of charge. And we did some educational support workshops, but most of what we did was programs for kids. Well, in 2020, when our kids went home, we surveyed all of our families and we found that families were really struggling. So we implemented some things during the pandemic that we're now continuing. So now I would say we might be more 50-50, 50% programs for kids, 50% support for families. We have a family-to-family mentoring program where we pair families that have older kiddos with some of the younger or more newly diagnosed, because you learn so much just person to person on tips and tricks and toilet training and how you can get your Medicaid funding and or insurance funding and, you know, how to write a great IEP for school system, everything else. We offer respite care events. That is a huge need for families raising kids with special needs, because a lot of times, because of what children have going on, either physically with feeding tubes or, you know, catheterizations, or mentally with meltdowns or behavior, it's very hard to find childcare workers. So we once a month offer a respite care event where we use volunteers and interns that will come and offer quality children's activities so parents can get a 3-hour break. We do a monthly webinar on different topics that are pertinent to families raising kids with special needs. We still have several autism resources. We started some mental health support. That was something that came out of the pandemic. You know, we're a big proponent of everyone having good mental health counseling. It's been a friend of mine and everybody else, but, you know, the stresses that are related both for the caregiver and for especially our teens, when a child with special needs becomes a teen and hits puberty and then goes into young adulthood, a lot of our kids struggle with depression or anxiety. And so we have done some mental health support groups. We're doing right now a caregiver yoga program. So I would say the 650 number, but we're continually growing. We are expanding this year to Texarkana. We expanded last year to Batesville. So we're offering programs in more and more cities each year.
Awesome. Okay. What would you say the hiring process is like at your company? I know you said you have that the boards that are like, if there's different boards in different cities, and then I know you have that program director. So what is the hiring process like?
Yes. Well, we're still a fairly small staff. So it started with a board of directors put together a job description and hired me. And serving as an executive director, I then have hired my staff. And so that has been putting together a job description, putting it out there, interviewing individuals, finding the best fit for the job task at hand. Our staff members are a director of programs that works and oversees all of our program directors, which is those community volunteers that serve and volunteers and interns. And then we did last year hire a full-time fundraising coordinator. So I oversee that position. She works with events and our fundraisers and our Friends of Community Connections, which is our monthly donor giving program. And then we have a part-time family and community support coordinator that oversees all of those family support programs we talked about. So hiring was then I interviewed and then I proposed to my board of directors and the board approves hiring for our program directors because they are definitely part-time. You know, if we're paying a stipend, it's small. Nobody serves as a program director because that's what they're doing it for the money. They're doing it because they have a heart for the kids. But that hiring process looks like Jessica Nichols, our director of programs, ends up putting out a need, interviewing individuals who are interested, and then she will make a decision. And her role, we've given her the autonomy to do that. So she has the ability to hire, if you will, program directors. We have 72 of those. So 72 individuals that are leading our different sports and arts programs around the state of Arkansas right now.
Awesome. And then I guess with those program directors, do they kind of like do the volunteer recruitment, or do you guys sort of do that in-house and then kind of direct them to the program directors? Or
yes. So our program directors, those individuals that are out in the community leading art or basketball, we do have a little job description for them. And their main roles are they are in charge of finding their volunteers for their program, securing the location in the community and the dates and times that that program will be offered, coming up with the game plan or the activity for each week with a plan B, because working with this population, you might think we are going to paint pots today. And if two or the three of the kids are not into painting pots, they might need to be ready to fold paper origami. You know, we like to have a plan A, B, and C, but planning the weekly events, coordinating the volunteers, finding the location, and then communicating to the families. We do registrations on the Community Connections website. And so we then will filter the kids that sign up to the director of programs. And it is also our expectation that our program directors email parents every week, reminders and updates on the session. So those are kind of the things that fall within the role. We do, I mentioned that people can sign up to volunteer on our website. We do then send those program directors the list of volunteers that want to help. So they're not on their own finding all the volunteers on their own. So they have a list to go off of. But then we love working with synergetic groups that make sense. So with every sport program we do, we try to find high school football teams, college soccer teams. For art, you know, we've looked for groups that are focused on the art that can come in as volunteers because it merges what they're passionate about and making it available for a special population that doesn't always have access to sports and the arts.
Yeah. All right. Can you share, so since you've done some of the like hiring in this past like couple of years, can you share some resume best practices that you like to see when reviewing candidates for positions at your company?
Yes. You know, I know that when I was in college, they talked so much about your resume. So these would be my, I've been out of it for a minute. And this is what you do every day. But my 101 would be the purpose of a resume is to get an interview. It is to get your foot kind of in the door. I don't know that very many people would ever hire just because it was like a rock star golden resume and anyone is hired on the spot. But my tips for a resume is you want to make sure all of your grammar and formatting is correct. I will throw something out and just I mean, it's sad, right? Because some people, I mean, I have a son with a learning disability. I'm like, God bless. I don't want somebody to, outrule him because he got words backwards. But, it shows professionalism. So you want correct grammar. You want it to be clean and concise. You want it to be something that very quickly on paints a picture of why you would be a good fit for the role. Some of the skills that are most needed for community connections, and I really feel like most nonprofit organizations it would be the same, but things we look for are someone with wonderful communication skills, written and verbal, because we're selling a mission. I usually say that I feel like this nonprofit role that I'm in is a lot like sales. I mean, there's people that do sales because you are selling why someone should volunteer on a Saturday and give up their personal time to serve with kids. You are selling the idea to a sponsor or a donor or a local business why they ought to give some of their sponsorship or marketing dollars to us and what we will do with that money. And a lot of times you're even selling to families that are raising kids with special needs and it's already hard why it is worthwhile to put it out there and allow their child to, try to participate in the program. So excellent communication skills. We always look for someone who has the ability to work autonomously. In the world we are living in, you are going to be far more successful if you are able to work and stay on top of things without having to be micromanaged. I mean, life's too busy, right? So I've now been around for a long time. So we've worked with a lot of interns and we've really worked with several different staff members. The ones that have succeeded the most are self-starters. They take initiative. They are able to take a program and run with it. They don't wait on direction. So communication, ability to work autonomously, being a self-starter, organization, being organized. And I know there's a level of that's innate in a person or not, but even when you are not well-organized person with the technology and the tools at hand, you can grow and work on yourself on keeping files organized and to-dos lists organized. Et cetera. And then I've received several cover letters and several resumes through the years. And I think that one thing that sets them apart is when you are putting yourself out there for a job to have some kind of personal tie to the cause. I mean, I have received cover letters that are like, I'm looking for my first job out of school, or I'm looking for a job that'll help me build my career. We don't want anybody that's looking for a job. We want someone who feels called to the mission of what we're doing. So on a resume, personalizing it for whichever organization or business that you're working for, trying to highlight key skills that you have, probably at least personally, carries more weight than I made a 3.8 in college. My degree is this. I mean, I do think that job experience and/or internships and work, I mean, I do think that most companies do look at that to say, do we have a proven track record of ability to work and hold down. I will say more and more people really do call on references. So I'm raising a 16-year-old right now, and he has started his first job. And it's almost like you don't always think about this till you're looking for a new job or you're looking for a career or you're applying for college. But I would love for anyone who ends up catching this podcast to hear, start thinking right now with the people that you would have as references for a potential job. Am I giving them every opportunity to say, yes, they're responsible. Yes, they show up on time. Yes, they have integrity. Because I mean, I think when I pick up a phone call, I'm going to say, would you rehire them? Why or why not? So in whatever role you're in, I would think right now, if you are working above reproach, giving everything 110% when you're there, et cetera.
Yeah. All right. So then going off of that, do you have any kind of interviewing best practices that you like to see when reviewing candidates for positions at your company, or some maybe like don'ts when it comes to interviewing?
Yes. And I would have thought that some of this is common sense nature, but I really don't think it is. I'm really not sure it is. So one, show up early for your interview. You probably want to be 10 to 15 minutes early because there are life circumstances, right? I mean, you really could have a flat tire and you really could have hit traffic and that kind of thing. So you want to allot so much extra time that you are in your car, getting yourself together 10 to 15 minutes before you have to be there, maybe even more, but be early to your interview. If in doubt, because a lot of times people think, I don't know what the dress code is. I mean, really, like you might, I mean, example, if you're interviewing for a manufacturing warehouse job, it's like you don't need to show up in your suit. But for whatever work, if you are in doubt on what to wear, dress up. You know, you can always dress up, and a nonprofit can say it's fine to wear shorts to work, but you want to look professional. Have clean hair, have clean fingernails. Don't look disheveled. I mean, I have had people show up at interviews that I feel like look like they were out at the bar the night before and are exhausted. So, I mean, really clean grooming, you know, and dressing up versus down and being early and on time. Another interviewing tip I would give is put some thought into the job role you're applying for and maybe come up with a couple of questions. When I will interview someone and I'll say, do you have any questions? Lots of times people are like, no, I don't think so. But those that have said, yes, I've actually thought about what is your plan for a fundraiser next year, et cetera. I'm like, they actually have thought about communications. Research the role, research the company, and research the industry that you're in prior to your interview. So you get your mind wrapped around the world that whoever you're interviewing with lives every day. Those would be a few.
Yes, those are great tips. What kind of tips can you give to new graduates on networking?
Well, once they have already graduated, I would say probably getting in and volunteering within an organization that you're wanting to serve in. Almost every community around here and really probably around the U.S. has civic organizations. Civic organizations are a wonderful way to network. I'm a member of the Conway Kiwanis Club. I joined the first year I got the job with Community Connections because I thought I'm going to need to get to know people in the community, and Kiwanis' mission is serving the children of the world. But there are Rotary clubs and Civitan clubs and Lion clubs, but a lot of those organizations pull people from multiple industries, I mean, banking and insurance and education, and they are all volunteer focused. And so you are able to get to know individuals and serve the local community. So both through your service outreach, you meet people, and then organizations within the civic organization, you meet people. So for new graduates, I would say volunteering, possibly joining a civic organization. Those would be probably my top two.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit about who has been your biggest supporter or mentor or role model over the course of your career?
Mm-hmm. That's great. I have a couple of board members, Krista Tapp and then Todd and Amy Denton. They were the founders of Community Connections, so they were my go-to because they were board members from the beginning. They have given me a lot of insight. When I need to run ideas, you know, by them and or I'm struggling with something, I have a wonderfully supportive board that's always a phone call away if I need to ask. I remember Krista Tapp specifically challenging me when I worked as a staff on my own and I was exhausted, like pushed me out of my comfort zone that it would be worth me raising more money and money would follow if I hired a staff that could do things that would free me up to do more things. That was like the best decision we ever made. So I would say the Dentons and the Taps, which are board members, they have been very helpful. When I first started, I didn't know anything about nonprofit organization. Like as you had mentioned in my intro, I came from distribution management when I managed a team of 50 forklift drivers and packers in a warehouse. It was very different. And it was for a large corporation, Target. I had an 800 number to call if the mouse on my computer broke. Then I became the single staff member responsible for A, raising enough money to cover my salary and do good things within the realms of families with special needs. And so I ended up reaching out to a couple of respected nonprofit directors in the community. So it wasn't that they've been my single most, haven't continued over the years, but I gleaned a lot of wonderful insight from individuals. One of the things I remember a lady sharing with me was that a great board of directors needs three D's, which is doers, donors, and door openers. I was like, okay, you know, you need people that can write checks. You need people that will come out to a program or will organize a storage shed with you or will get their hands dirty and recruit sponsors for an event. And then you need door openers. They might not have a lot of time and they might not have a lot of money, but they can get you in with a school or a church or a library that you're wanting to offer a program, you know.
Yeah. What kind of advice would you give to someone pursuing a career path similar to your own?
Someone that feels like they know, maybe especially at the collegiate level, high school or college, if they think that they would maybe want to go into the nonprofit sector, I would 100% suggest that they volunteer or get an internship with an organization similar to what that they think they're interested in. Really, because gosh, one of my favorite things about service learning is we have had individuals who have thought maybe that they wanted to teach special education or thought they wanted to be a physical therapist. They come and they volunteer with us, and it's able to clearly help them think, nope, I don't think pediatrics is for me. I thought it was going to be one way and it's actually a lot harder, or this seals the deal. We have had people change their majors and their entire career trajectory because they were business majors and they came out with the tennis team and volunteered with tennis, fell in love with what we were doing. And they're like, I think that what I really want to do is be a speech therapist, or, you know, so getting your hands wet with what something is really like is so important. So if someone wants to work in a nonprofit, let them come work with somebody like Community Connections, or United Way is a great one because United Way works with multiple charities in local communities. Where they can be like, oh, this is what fundraising really is like. And, oh, I thought that there might be someone who does the spreadsheets late at night or is getting the water bottles together or is shopping at Academy Sports for our, you know, sports equipment, et cetera. So volunteering, getting an internship, spending some time taking a nonprofit director to lunch or coffee with a list of questions and picking their brains. I think that would be great too.
Yeah. An important point that I want to kind of make too with you mentioning that of like students potentially getting in there and then maybe possibly changing their mind about what they want to do is that sometimes people think that, oh, they should just wait until their junior, their senior year to find like an internship or to do those volunteering opportunities in nonprofit work, if that's what they're interested in. But really, it sounds like, you know, they definitely need to get in there early, like volunteering or trying to do an internship when you're a freshman or sophomore is just as important or more important to do than waiting until like the last minute.
Yeah. Well, 100%. And a lot of times people do internships because in their senior level course, it's a requirement. But lots of companies will be flexible. I can think a freshman or a sophomore might think, I don't have 360 hours in a semester that I can really give to something. We have brought on multiple interns, that do it 100% unofficially, but it's an internship and it's a resume builder and it's a, you know, career builder. And we actually love when we get to know individuals younger because they can have a true impact when you get to spend 2 or 3 years instead of a 4 month semester stint. You have an opportunity to meet families and see and watch their growth and or see a program that you've implemented take off. And then when they graduate and or move off, they see that it's continued. Several of our programs were started by college students in internships that are still going today.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So obviously I work in career services. Did you ever utilize the resources career services offers while attending UCA? This could have been attending a career fair or having your resume reviewed or participating in mock interviews.
Yes. I remember when I was at UCA, I attended one or two. I don't know if they were called like Dress for Success events. They were Dress for Success and they kind of showed like a tie. I think they even did a fashion show. It was like an attire of what business professional clothes, you know, kind of look like and did some interview tips and skills. I remember going physically to the career services department. Do you realize I was in college before there was social media? Part of me thinks, praise the Lord, the world didn't need to see 18-year-old Courtney Leach. But, you know, I ended up going and I feel like I was looking on a database in career services for job opportunities when I was first looking for a job straight out of school. And so, yes, I did use career services. Everyone should, right? A lot of times people are in college with the goal to learn a skill, to get a job and make money and pay your bills and be contributing members of society once they leave UCA.
Yeah. All right. Where can students or other listeners go to reach out to you if they have questions or would like to connect with you?
Yes, I would love anyone to email me with questions or anything really. And my email is Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y at communityconnections.com. wealthofinformation.org. And then our website is the Wealth of Information. I'm pretty sure my contact information is on our website too. But even if somebody who has caught this podcast ends up knowing a family raising a child with special needs, a lot of families come to us by word of mouth. Our website is communityconnectionsar.org. And at the bottom of our homepage, there is a link to subscribe to a weekly email newsletter that we send out. So if anyone is very interested in staying informed, you can go and subscribe to the newsletter, which you can unsubscribe at any time, or you can click and view our most recent newsletter. But yeah, send an email and or visit us online would be great. We are on social media, so Facebook and Instagram. You can follow Community Connections as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on and talk to me more about your organization and sort of a little bit about your career journey.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I love this. Knowledge is power, right? So the more you can like soak in and learn, it's helpful. So thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you for listening to Noteworthy Networks. Support for this podcast comes from the University of Central Arkansas's Department of Career Services. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at Noteworthy Networks and Career Services at UCA Career on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We hope you'll listen in for the next guest and more career advice to come.